Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Greta, it's our home away from home for Afterburner. We'll be there for live watch parties throughout the season. Should be your spot regardless. Before, during, and after the game, grab a cocktail, something from the menu, let the games begin, or maybe you get into the game yourself. Over 50 arcade games from vintage to state-of-the-art. Load up some credits on that Greta game card of yours and get at it. Greta Calgary, located at 213 10th Avenue Southwest. Check them out online, gretabar.com.
It's nearly the best time of the year. Playoff hockey is around the corner. And I'll tell you what, the Grey Eagle Resort and Casino is the place to be. Cheer on your favorite teams with us at the Stage Bar. Enjoy the big game on one of those huge screens over the bar with friends, drinks, and delicious food. Let's go visit greyeagleresortandcasino.ca for more information. Now, while I've got your attention, let me tell you about the happy hour at the Grey Eagle Resort and Casino. Let's make the most of the day and spend your afternoons with great drinks and food. Join us at the Stage Bar and Blaze Bar and Grill for our new happy hour every day, 2 till 5. Enjoy food, drinks, all starting at $5. Make the most of your days. Visit greyeagleresortandcasino.ca for more information. If you're thinking of buying or selling your home in the Calgary area, there's one guy you've got to talk to. That's Derek Newman of the Derek Newman Real Estate Group with CIR Realty. Buying or selling doesn't really matter. Derek does it all. He's a volunteer in the community, active in sports around the city, whether it's golf, curling, huge Flames fan. So talking sports or talking about the real estate market, definitely give him a shout. He's approachable, trustworthy, and hardworking. Also, Derek's got a pretty vast network. He's even got access to some homes often that aren't even on the market yet. And you can ask him about his complimentary home staging consultation as well. Buying or selling, call him or text him right now at 403-619-6661. Derek will make it easy for you. Get Derek and his network to work for you. That's Derek Newman. Email him at dnewman@cirrealty.ca. More post-game reaction right here. We're back on Afterburner.
Well, at first they called it the Elias Lindholm trade, but now we're going to call it the Andrei Kuzmenko trade, as the Russian winger puts up 3 goals for his second NHL hat trick and his another multi-goal game with the Calgary Flames, as the Flames take home a 6-3 win over the Anaheim Ducks. Those chants of "you can't win here" don't sound very loud anymore. Welcome to Afterburner. Mike Gould's here with you alongside the author of On the Clock at the Flames, at the Calgary Flames NHL Draft book, and the managing editor of FlamesNation.ca, Ryan Pike. And Pike, can you just first confirm that I got the title of your book right? I think I might have missed a couple of words in there.
It's a long title. You're close enough.
There you go. And Piker, we got to start off the hop, obviously, with Andrei Kuzmenko, because, I mean, this game looked like it was going to be driven home pretty convincingly by the Flames entering the third period. They had a big 4-0 lead. Then all of a sudden it got a little bit fraught. They gave up three in a row to the Anaheim Ducks. And then Andrei Kuzmenko puts in back-to-back goals to elevate the Flames to a 6-3 victory. What is with this guy? Is it safe to say, because this is my own assumption, is this guy the most skilled offensive forward on the Flames roster right now?
He's definitely up there. I'll say this. I mean, this was the last home game of the year for the Ducks. It has been a garbage year for the Ducks. I think if you're a Ducks fan, you haven't had a lot to cheer for. There's been a lot of injuries. There's been a lot of guys playing below expectations, young and old. And I think this is, outside of a few bright spots, this is a year that you're just going to burn the tape and try to start fresh in October. But, you know, going into the third period of your last home game, I can only imagine what was said in that room, thinking, you know, this is, you know, Silverberg's last home game for the Ducks. He's going to be retiring at the end of the year. And they went out there and went, God damn it, we're not going to be embarrassed in our own building. And they played a really good, desperate, tactical third period. And then they took a penalty, and then the Flames managed to get a little bit of breathing room. And, you know, I'll say this for the Ducks. I mean, like, they managed to get some ugly ones in the third. You know, they, you know, I think Dustin Wolf got 95% of that first goal on him, but it just squirted through. And then Sam Colangelo gets his first. Then I think Nikita Ochuk is going to have nightmares about that Trevor Zegras pass where, you know, he goes to, he behind the net, goes to the, towards the far post, throws it back behind his back to the near post for Vetrano. And I have no idea how he knew Vetrano was sneaking in, but absolutely no one had Vetrano. Great play, great goal. And then a goal that goes in slightly off of Weegar. I mean, there was ugly, there was pretty, there was everything in between, and it still wasn't enough for the Ducks to get anything out of the last home game. So that's the kind of year it's been in Orange County. They, you know, the only smiles and laughter going on in that area is across the highway at Disneyland, because at the Honda Center, the year's been, it sucked. And they tried to salvage it, and they couldn't quite do it. And, you know, the Flames, after playing, you know, I think Ryan Huska said that they were lousy the first two periods against LA. It was almost the opposite. They basically flipped the script. They were good for two periods, and then they were kind of white knuckling it in the third. And, you know, that's what happened. If you play well enough, I mean, you look at the shape of a 6-3 game and you go, they must have played real good the whole time. Nope. It was way more dramatic than a 6-3 goal or a 6-3 final score should have been.
Yeah, you look at that timeout that they take after the 4-3 goal that the Anaheim Ducks score, and they end up scoring back-to-back goals after that. Not a bad piece of coaching there by the Flames brass. Yes, indeed, Ryan Pike, a bit of a strange game, a bit of a lopsided game, one in which the Calgary Flames, I would say, controlled the play for the first two periods, went a little bit back and forth on them in the third. In the end of the day, though, it is Kuzmenko getting a hat trick and a number of Flames having big games. Jonathan Huberto gets a pair of assists, as does Marty Pospisil. Nazem Kadri gets a goal and two assists. Andre Kuzmenko, of course, as we mentioned, with three goals on four shots. That's a pretty hefty shooting percentage. And Mackenzie Weegar logging 23-43 and picking up a pair of assists. Now, Dustin Wolf ends up stopping 19 of 22 shots that he faces in this game. For a while there, it looked like he might be on track for a shutout. He ends up giving up three in a pretty quick run of things in that third period. But overall, I would say that I was pretty impressed with Wolf in this game. What was your take?
I mean, he did what he needed to. I mean, if you look at the goals, I mean, one's kind of a fluky one that gets through him. One goes off a defenseman when he has an Alex Killorn screen. And one is just, you know, again, you're going to look at that play. Like, if you're doing video for the Flames and you're showing, you know, what'd you do differently? I mean, outside of, you know, just don't leave Trevor Zegras a lane to pass. Like, what are you supposed to do with that? That's just a highly skilled player making a highly skilled play. And I'd say 80% of the league would try that play and it'd go off a foot or go off the back of the net or it end up in the corner, because most guys can't do that with the puck. It's just not in their skill set. But Trevor Zegras, as we've seen, don't leave him alone with the puck, because he'll do something. And, you know, I'd say for Wolf, I mean, you know, you'd love to see him get a slightly better result in terms of something to pump up his numbers to make him probably feel a bit more confident heading into the offseason. But I mean, you know, he was good when he had to be, and he wasn't the reason that it was 4-3. He also wasn't the reason it was 6-3. He was, I would argue, you know, he wasn't tested a lot. He was present and he was not bad, but I would not say he was in the top three or four Flames on this evening, nor in this kind of situation would you want him to be.
Mike, we've talked a lot about on various shows about what Jonathan Huberto needs to improve, and obviously he hasn't had the bounce back season that maybe he would have hoped. But one player who very much has, and who has very quietly put together a 71-point season now for the Calgary Flames with a couple of games left to go, is Nazem Kadri, who for my money, has been playing some of his best hockey as a Calgary Flame down the stretch this year. Even though there hasn't been a whole lot to play for, he's been going in and out on a night-to-night basis, doing a very good job. He has 3 points tonight. He's got 5 seasons left on this contract, and it is going to be a balancing act, I think, with the Flames going forward in terms of who they keep, who they trade. Obviously, we see the quote that comes out today from Mackenzie Weegar talking about how he's committed to being here through this process. We don't really know what the feeling is with Nazem Kadri. There's been a lot said in the media this season at various points in time. Well,
let's give our flowers to the Sportsnet's Eric Francis, who's traveling with the team and did a lot of good work on that Eastern road trip prior to the trade deadline, getting a lot of good information out there from the players. And he's on this road trip. You know, he talked to Kadri right after the trade deadline, where I think right around the trade deadline, where he basically flat out asked Kadri, "Hey, you going to be want to stick around for a rebuild?" And Kadri stick handled around that and didn't really say definitively yes or no, because my guess is he's not sure, probably. You know, in the middle of a season, it's hard to really get that kind of distance. And some guys tend not to be terribly introspective during a season because you're busy trying to get through a season. Mackenzie Weegar is generally a much more introspective person, I think, than Nazem Kadri is, at least in season. And, you know, Mackenzie Weegar, you know, said this to Eric Francis. I assume there's going to be a column on Sportsnet's website in the very near future about Weegar's future. But, you know, if you're a Flames fan, you hear this from a guy signed for seven more years. This is year one of eight.
Seven more years. Yep. He's the same as Huberdeau.
At 6'2", 5", and a guy who I don't think Mackenzie Weegar is getting many Norris votes this year, but I don't think they're out of the realm of possibility in the near future if he keeps playing this way, because, you know, it's all voting is partially based on reputation, and Weegar is developing a hell of a reputation as just being a damn good hockey player who can play in every game situation. So, I mean, you know, give, you know, we're going to be giving a lot of plaudits out to some Flames on this evening. And Weegar, I think, for the body of work dating back to the All-Star break last year, he's been fabulous. I think if you get anything close to this level of play for Mackenzie Weegar, even 4 of the remaining 7 years of his contract, I think you look at that as a definitive win for both sides.
Yeah, and going back to my previous point, I think with Weegar and Kadri playing as well as they are this year, you look at Kadri, who has 71 points now. You look at Weegar, who picked up 2 assists today for his first 50-point season in the NHL, which is exactly what you want from a player of his billing, making what he makes under contract for as long as he is. That's an absolute win. I think there is really only one unambiguously bad contract on the Calgary Flames at this point, and that's Jonathan Huberdeau's, which is, I think, a testament, because it also goes to show of how they have stick-handled around potential mistakes. Because if the Calgary Flames sign Elias Lindholm to that contract, I don't think it's long before we're starting to talk about that as an unambiguously bad contract. And not just that, if they had signed Noah Hanifin, not that the contract that he got from Vegas today is bad value at, I think, 8 by 7.35. But for the Flames, for where they are and where they're going from here, I think it's very easy to make a case that it might have been bad value for them.
I've been pretty blunt in my assessment of the whole Hanifin situation, where if you think you're changing up your team and need to go another direction, I don't know how you do that with someone under that kind of a contract for that long. And B, if you, like, right now, like, say there's 2 years left on Rasmus Anderson's deal, and if Rasmus Anderson wants to stick around, if I'm his agent, I point to Mackenzie Weegar's deal and say, yeah, give me that. As soon as you sign Noah Hanifin to a larger deal, if I'm Anderson, the framing is suddenly a bit higher in terms of my asking price, in terms of the conversation. And I think, you know, they're right now, Mackenzie Weegar is, in a lot of people's opinions, including mine, the best defenseman on the Calgary Flames. And so any kind of contract talks for anybody else begin and end with, well, Weegar's our best guy. Here's what he's making. What do you think you are worth relative to him? And I don't think that's a terrible way of doing it. Brad Treliving did that with the quote unquote Giordano cap, where Mark Giordano is the first bit of business that Brad Treliving did when he was the GM in terms of significant moves. And he signed the best player on the team at the time to a $675 cap hit. And basically the message sent to everyone was, well, if you want more money than him, you got to prove you're better. And during his entire tenure, I think what we saw Johnny Gaudreau, I think, approach that number. And I think short term, I think we saw Matthew Tkachuk flirt with that number too. But you didn't have a lot of guys making at or very much more than your best player, because that doesn't make any sense. And so sure, the Flames have the things they need to maneuver around in terms of forward contracts. You know, Kadri and Huberdeau, you know, while they've been better, especially Kadri, I think Kadri's very close to making, you know, for what he is, if he's flirting with a point per game, you're not really going to bat an eye at $7 million a year for however long that is. And you're just hoping, I think at this point, that you're getting surplus value from Kadri and Uyghur to offset the potential negative value or overpay for Huberdeau. But, you know, overpay doesn't mean guys don't have value. It just means that, you know, you might have set the bar a little bit high for them. But yeah, it's, I think I'm on board with you. I think with the whole Hanifin thing, if you think you're close, you lock in Hanifin and fill in the gaps around him. If you don't think you're close, you let Hanifin go and you use the flexibility he gives you leaving to do a lot of different things. And, you know, we've seen a lot of nice things from Daniil Miromanov. The Flames have a first round pick in 2026. The Flames, depending what happens with Vegas in the playoffs, could have another pick in 2020, where the hell year it is. I have a list somewhere. There's too many picks. But yeah, there's I don't know. There's reasons for optimism, even when you look at the fact that the Flames are 17 points back of a playoff spot right now.
Now, the way that I look at the whole draft pick situation is, I agree, they've done a very good job in doing what they can to add picks in early rounds. They've added a first round pick from Vancouver. They've added a first round pick from Vegas. They've added another second round pick from Dallas and a second round pick from Vegas if Vegas wins around this season. They've done good work with that. What I think is imperative for them at this point going forward is not just quality, but quantity. They need both of those things, because where they're at with their system, they haven't made very many picks in the last couple of years. Their reserve list compared to some other teams in the league, they've got good players on it, but it just doesn't quite have the same stack nature to it, where you have guys on top of guys. You're really sort of banking on one player or two players at this point. Now, they're at a point where over the next two draft years, they have 15 picks instead of 14, which is what they started with. Now, you can make a very good case that they have moved some of those picks higher up in the rotation, whereas this year, they don't have a fifth round pick and they don't have a seventh round pick because of trades that they made in Brad Treliving's second last year as Flames GM, where he got Kelly Yarncroke and Ryan Carpenter at the trade deadline. But they have a second round pick that they didn't have. They've got a third round pick that they didn't have. But it's all about getting these bullets in the system when you don't have them from later, because you look at what a good scouting staff can do with sixth round picks and seventh round picks. We've seen that in Calgary before with guys like Andrew Mangiapane and Dustin Wolf. Just how important is it for the Flames going forward to continue on this asset management purview?
Oh, I don't think it'd be underrated, because I think, you know, we've discussed this in the past. The idea is, I think the Flames got a lot of depth in their system. They obviously have a goaltender in Dustin Wolf that they're crazy about. They're pretty high on Arseny Sergeyev in I guess now he's at Penn State. They're pretty high in Yegor Yegorov, but until he comes over to North America, you don't really know what's going on with him. And I mean, Russian Junior is basically a crapshoot. It's hard to really tell how those numbers will translate. But they're pretty happy with their goaltending depth right now. If you look at their defensive depth, they have a lot of guys that sort of have one profile another, but aren't really all arounders. They don't really have any guys you look at and go, hot damn, that's gonna be the guy we build a team around. And you can make the same case for the forwards. They have a lot of guys, like, you know, I think Connor Zary has blown people away this year. You know, he's gonna get Calder votes, I'll tell you that. He'll appear in a bunch of ballots because he's been very, very good for the Flames. We saw him score a heck of a goal that we'll talk about later. But He's been good. You know, we've seen flashes from Coronado, flashes from Pelche. When Sam Hanzik gets to the Flames or potentially the Wranglers next weekend, we might see flashes there. Like, they have a lot of guys that are easy to be optimistic about, but there's no one that you really look at and say, that is the player I'm going to cast my hopes and dreams on. Like, there's no Sean Monahan. There's no Matthew Tkachuk. There's no late round pick that seems to be popping in the way a Gaudreau did. And so, you know, they're a scouting staff that's done exceptionally well hitting singles and doubles. very consistently. They very, very rarely whiff on picks. And, you know, you and I have argued in the past about the Logan Stankoven, William Stromgren of it all. Different profiles, you know, there's reasons why they make the picks they made. And I think now, with the things that Stromgren is doing in their system, very nice work. I'm sure if you have a crystal ball, you might make a different move, but I think they're pretty confident with the move they did make. But, you know, they need, you know, one of those picks that you look at a Stromgren and you go, he'll be a good pro. Damn, you wish that would be a home run rather than a solid single or double. But they're not whiffing on picks as often, or, you know, when they do, they're guys like, you know, okay, Jake Bulbin doesn't turn out. Okay, whatever. You got a Grushnikov in the system. You know, okay, cool. You probably look at that and go, you're probably coming out even there. And so they're really good at that. They're good at accumulating depth, and they have depth everywhere. But outside of Wolf, I don't think they have anyone that makes fans jump out of their seats and go, hot damn, I need to go to Fanatic or where the hell the store is called now and get that jersey. But, you know, when you have, what, 8 picks in the first 4 rounds of this year's draft, they got multiple first round picks potentially in the next few drafts. I think 5 firsts in the next 3 drafts, some kind of configuration, depending on what the hell happens with all these other conditionals. You can fill your system pretty well if you have a few good years of the draft. And I think they're well positioned for it. But, you know, it's easy right now to look at names on a dartboard and go, hot damn, I love that player. They're 17, 18-year-old kids. And, you know, we're all some version of a mess at 17 or 18. And it's hard to really tell how human beings will project, let alone professional athletes. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. But, yeah, it's going to be a fascinating next few years.
Yeah, they have lots of flexibility. They have cap space. I mean, you look at today's news, and we'll get to that in the second half of the show. There is one less team on the market for taking on bad contracts going forward. And the Calgary Flames, I think, can position themselves well to make their case in that marketplace and take on unfavorable contracts to shore up areas of need, particularly on defense, where they've got a couple of openings. And they can maybe look at taking on an unwieldy contract from another team on defense and maybe getting a second or a third round pick. Because I'm of the opinion that they could really stand to have a couple of very big years at the draft, and not just big in terms of picking the right guys, which obviously they need to do, but just picking a lot of guys, because I think they have that developmental room. And we'll see how they end up doing it. They've got a lot of picks as is. They've got more than their original allotment, and at minimum, that's what you can hope for. And yeah, you're right on the Stromgren Stankoven thing. I mean, obviously, I think Stankoven has made that impact. Stromgren, though, has turned me into a bit of a believer over the last few weeks. He's been undeniably good with the Calgary Wranglers, and it's the sort of success story that you want to see out of your minor league affiliate, because that's a guy who's in his first year of North American Pro, and he's doing things down there that not many guys can do. I mean, I think of my 4 seasons now, which is crazy to say, watching that farm team up close, and not a lot of guys come straight over from Europe and are able to do what he has done in his first year. Now, I would say
he's got some Klapka vibes to him, man. Klapka took 2-3 months to figure out how North American hockey was, and then something just clicked for him, and he's been very consistent since then. I think Stromgren was the same way. I think since Christmas or January, he's been just a guy that's figured it out.
Yeah, but what I would say is that where I think they missed the boat in a draft year like 2022, and obviously it's easy to say this with your hindsight goggles on, but they played it a little safe with their second round pick. They went for a guy who had, you know, individual attributes in a Finnish forward who we won't name, and Lane Hutson goes 3 picks later. Like, that's the sort of swing that you would hope to see from a team where they only have 3 picks. Now, this year, you're hoping for a bit of a mix, because you might go into the draft with 9-10 picks. And of course, I mean, they mentioned it during the show on Sportsnet today. They talked about Tiege, and everybody's talking about Tiege because he's skyrocketing. He is absolutely skyrocketing, playing for the Kelowna Rockets, and they're in the WHL playoffs right now, and he has been their driving force. Pike, it's something that I think people kind of miss out on sometimes, where they attribute what some of Tiege is doing to a guy like Andrew Kristall, who's a very good prospect in his own right with the Washington Capitals, but he's not even on a line with those two, with him right now. He's on a line with two guys who haven't even been drafted, and he is completely tearing it up in the WHL. But is a winger, or a guy who currently plays wing. Who knows what he becomes in the next level, but is there any merit to the idea that the Flames should prioritize a certain position at this year's draft? Do they need certain things other than more than others, or is the package that somebody like a Ginla offers just too much to overlook?
Outside of goaltenders, they need everything. I mean,
they do.
In an ideal world, I'm just going to throw out names. Ideal world, you get, you know, Artem Levchinov or one of those big toolsy high-end defensemen early, and then Dickinson. With the Vancouver pick, maybe you take a swing at a center like a Jet Luchenko or someone like that, or Tarek Peragic out of Prince George. I think I screwed up his name, but you know, the guy with all the points in Prince George. Like, you know, you can go for a D or a center, and ideally you spread it around. But that's the chaos of the draft. I mean, if the Flames went into the 16 draft and their draft, you know, no one expected, you know, Columbus to go off board when they did, and Tkachuk just fell in the Flames' lap. They didn't think they were going to get him, and then he fell in their lap. It's one of those things where you just go there and your stuff happens. But I think Craig hit the nail on the head. You know, Craig Conroy, as long as I've been covering the team, has been, you know, very intimately involved with the draft. Pretty much, I would argue, outside of Todd Button, Craig is probably the person who's most hands-on in terms of draft prep, and that was before he was the GM. And they work the list. The big, you know, we'll have to get to the business of the day momentarily, but I think the big thing that Jay Feaster did as GM was basically just said, hey, just put the guys in the right order and then draft. And then you don't need to do anything too fancy. You just, if you've done your job properly as a scouting team and you have your guys in the right order and you're prioritizing the right things for your team and making your list and ordering your list, you're just going to pick the best guy. And they did that in, you know, I know every team says this, but they had Connor Zary extremely high on their list in 2020. They traded down twice and still got the guy they wanted. If you are good at what you do and are confident in your guys who make your list and do your work for you, you can do that. You can have your cake and eat it too. I mean, then you got to use the picks well, but I think it's one of those things where if Tiija Ginla is the top guy on their list when they hit the podium and everyone else that they love better is gone, I think you take Tiija Ginla and you don't think twice about it. I don't think you prioritize him above other people based on his last name, but I also don't think you shy away from him either.
I think that's a good way to put it. And I think back to some other times where there have been good players available, and obviously Tkachuk is the big one. He's available there at six, and had the Flames shied away based on his last name, would have been a big mistake. I obviously get that he didn't stick around here all that long, but you look at that 2016 draft, that's exactly the model the Flames need to follow. And you look, they make 9 picks that year. 9. That's good. I mean, ideally, in my own mind, and rational people can disagree, I would love to see them make 10 or 11, maybe even 12, but 9 is fine. But you even look at the 9 players they pick. They get good value out of a lot of those picks. They get Tkachuk. They get Adam Fox, obviously, who they end up trading in the Dougie Hamilton deal. They get players who are in their organization. I mean, obviously, they get Dylan Dubé in the second round. They try Tyler Parsons as a goaltending prospect in the second. He had some flash. It didn't quite work out. But they get guys who stick around in their organization, even in the later rounds, where they get Itu Tuilola and Matthew Phillips. They do well. They get these high upside swings. They get a good mix of guys. That's exactly what they need to do this year. Now, it's just a matter of where they end up picking. And obviously, with today's win over the Anaheim Ducks, the Flames fall in the lottery standings, so to speak, because obviously Arizona ends up beating the Edmonton Oilers, so they don't get any ground there. The Flames, I believe, still in line to pick 8th overall in this year's NHL draft. And if I can remember correctly off the top of my head, I believe that accompanies a 6% chance of picking first overall in the 2024 NHL draft. What a gift that would be for this Calgary Flames team to be able to make its first, not just its first top 3 pick in club history, but its first top 1 pick in club history. But Pike, as we both know, that will not happen. So beyond that, let's move forward to tonight's highlight of the night. Let's get back on topic with
burying the lead, talking about a 6-3 Calgary Flames victory over the hated, the reviled Anaheim
Ducks. Anaheim Ducks. Yeah, I mean, you look at it. 3 years ago, we would have been talking about this, and it would have been, oh, my goodness, they beat the Anaheim Ducks in Anaheim. Now we're in game 78, 79 of the regular season, and nobody cares. I'm just going to say it. Nobody cares. I mean, some people care. Andre Kuzmenko cares. He scores 3 goals. The people who like Andre Kuzmenko care. I care. I mean, I like Andre Kuzmenko. He's done a good job in Calgary. But in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't really matter, Mr. Pike, because what do they really got to play for at this point, except for each other? But tonight's highlight of the night, we got to go to it. Jack, you can pull it up. It's a really nice goal. Connor Zary getting it in tight off a little nifty feed by Jonathan Huberdeau, and he puts it upstairs. Zary's been a topic of conversation lately, and boy, this goal is sure to further that, Pike.
Yeah, this is, I mean, fourth game at center, and I should mention that our highlight of the night is brought to you by our dear friends at Betway.
Yes.
The highlight, like, look at this move. He's facing Alex Killorn, who I believe has won a Stanley Cup. Correct me if I'm wrong.
You're right. You're wrong. Two.
He wriggles his way past Alex Killorn on the boards on the zone entry, goes to the net, makes this nice little give-and-go play with Huberdeau, and then just from right around the blue paint chips it over a goalie's shoulder. And that's a confident play. That's not a play you'd expect from a guy who's played less than 60 NHL games. That's a play you expect from somebody who's playing with a lot of swagger to his game. And, you know, very quietly, I mean, he's one of the plus minus leaders in the entire rookie class. He's one of the plus minus leaders, the entire Flames forward group. I think only Blake Coleman has a better plus minus than he does. And he's been a guy that, you know, he had that lull in the middle of the season. And I think a lot of guys have that lull where, you know, you get to the NHL and, you know, Rasmus Anderson did a lovely soliloquy about this after one of the recent games. I think it was the LA win, where he discussed, like, you know, your first year, it's new and everything. But at a certain point, you sort of hit the midseason lull where you're kind of grinding a bit. And I think, you know, Zary was kind of grinding a bit. Then he got hurt and then he came back and he was kind of didn't really have his mojo going for a while. And then he sat for a game. And, you know, we saw very famously in 2014, Johnny Gaudreau sat as a spectator for a game in Columbus, watched and went, oh, that's what I'm supposed to be doing. And then all of a sudden, every pass he made was perfect. Every, you know, he always knew where to be because he wasn't operating under the college mindset of where things were going. He was operating as an NHL mindset. And I think, you know, Zary is a smart enough guy that I think he took that experience of not being around and sponged it and figured out a way to get the most out of it. And as a result, I think, you know, four games at center, you would not know that it was his first four games as a National Hockey League center. And, you know, who knows what it turns into, but turned into a hell of a goal tonight.
I thought you were going to talk about the game where Gaudreau, Sean Monahan, and Lance Boma were all scratches because of a Super Bowl party the night before. Do I have that right? That was in the 2015-16 season where they were all late to practice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was what you were going to talk about off the top, but yeah, that was under Bob Hartley, I think.
Bob the Builder.
Oh, that guy. Yeah, it's funny. You know, you go back to the 2020 draft and that first round, I was really going back and forth for a while there between Connor Zary and Dawson Mercer. And talk about two guys that have very similar upside in the NHL and who have sort of shown similar things this season. Mercer's had a bit of a down year in comparison to what he's shown previously in New Jersey. But I mean, he's a guy who a lot of Flames fans very much wanted in all those Jacob Markstrom conversations that were happening with New Jersey before the deadline. And the Flames kind of have their own homegrown version of Dawson Mercer in Connor Zary, and who's to say what he could be? I mean, you look back at some of the guys who went high in recent years in the WHL. Connor Zary was high on a lot of people's lists. I remember Corey Pronman at The Athletic, I think he had him 10th on his final list before that year's draft. And I look at what Seth Jarvis has turned into with the Carolina Hurricanes. I know you were very high on him before that draft.
Such a good player.
And wouldn't it be something if Connor Zary, with the right chemistry and the right people around him, turns into the Flames equivalent of that type of player? He sure has some nice hands, and he showed it on that goal tonight, which is our highlight of the night. As you mentioned, Pike, presented by Betway. Get the Betway app on your phone. Bet the responsible way with Betway. And with Betway, you can get a free bet up to $200 if your first bet loses. Create a new account, scan the QR code on the screen, and redeem your bonus. Place a bet with no minimum amount required, and if that bet loses, you'll get a refund up to $200. You can then use that money to bet on your favorite sports. but be wary that offer is only available outside of Ontario. So head over to Betway and maybe bet on some Connor Zary futures, because boy, oh boy, does he have a bright future with this Calgary Flames team. He is, I would say, I wrote a piece over at Daily Faceoff earlier, I think, yeah, it was earlier this week, and it was about the Calgary Flames rebuilding versus retooling, that nomenclature. It's obviously a discussion that's been had to death in Calgary, and you know, I don't know if I necessarily added anything new to that dichotomy between rebuild or retool, because again, it's been done ad nauseum. But I did say that they don't currently have a core, and I don't mean that as a disrespect to any of the players on the roster. And I think on certain other teams, there are players on this team who could be part of cores on other teams, like a guy like Nazem Kadri or a guy like Mackenzie Weegar. But for where the Flames are right now, I'm not certain they have a definitive nucleus that they can rally around. That being said, though, Connor Zary, who we just talked about, I would say he and maybe Hunter Brustevitz, in terms of future pieces already in the organization, they're maybe as close as they've got.
I will give no one any credit for anything till they play pro hockey. I've yeah. just seen too, I've been hurt too many times putting my hopes and dreams on the fortunes of young men. That's a bad quote out of context, but I'm going with it.
Oh, Jesus.
This is the idea, but you know, we've seen, I say this, I think right now the idea is Tree used to sort of joke about, he used the term early on, asset accumulation. The idea is, like, you're not necessarily building a specific thing yet. You're getting pieces that could turn into a thing. And I think, because I think if you're building something, and like, you know, think about this, like, hockey roster construction is as much art as it is science. And sometimes you're just going to luck into things. I don't think they really anticipated that the team would gel together in the 14 to 16 year span, that, you know, those two seasons as it did. I don't think they expected the line brawl in Vancouver to develop a team mindset at that point. I don't, you know, does anyone really think when Mark Giordano joined the team as an AHL signing to fill out a spot in Lowell, Massachusetts, that he would turn into the captain? No, they were just looking for bodies. And so I think right now you're still in that mindset. You're looking for bodies. You're looking for bodies with upside, and you're looking for attributes that could project. And so I think the challenge is, like, okay, you look at Zary, you go, really smart, toolsy guy, could probably play center. Don't know what his upside is. All I know is he can probably be a good winger / center at the NHL level. Okay, cool. What else you got? You got, you know, Coronado can just, he makes a lot of moves around the net. And I think he needs a good summer to sort of, you know,
big time,
learn from what didn't work this year and maybe add a bit of muscle. But you could see, especially the last couple of games, you know, the moves he makes, the confidence he had with the puck, he there's something there. And I think there's a lot of guys in the system. You know, Pelche, if he has his swagger going, is very good. He's starting to get it back with the Wranglers. He's not quite exactly, I don't think he's 100% of the way there yet, but there's something there. They have a lot of guys that are like that, where you go, there's something there. And I think the big challenge is, I think you just got to get a bunch of ingredients in the pot and then see what you get out of them. And then once you sort of see what it turns into, then you go and find some pieces to, you know, fill in the gaps. I think by the time the new building opens in 2027, you know, Michael Backlund's going to be, what year is he?
38.
You know, yeah. There's going to be a lot of guys are going to be on the backside of their careers. So I don't think you necessarily build with the idea that, hot damn, you need to find the right guys to surround Nazem Kadri or Michael Backlund, as much as they're both very good players. I think you want to find guys that those guys can bring the best out of, so that by the time Backlund is ready to maybe, you know, start thinking about his future, they've got a team around him that they think they can go out and do something for him. And I think that's the big thing. And I always use the term, if I'm criticized for one thing, it's for being, actually, I'm criticized for many things. And one of the things I think I'm rightfully criticized for is my blind optimism at points. But I think one of the reasons to be optimistic right now is, I think we don't have any clue what the hell Conroy's going to do. And that's exciting to me. It's the idea, like, you know, if you look at some of the, just look at the picks he made this year. If you look at the 24 class, Sam Hanzik, you know, very prototypical Flames pick, big Western League kid, you know, European import. He, you know, he fits a lot of the check boxes that the Flames tend to go for early on in drafts. But then, you know,
BCHL winger going to college. They never do that. Toolsy nope. Right shot center playing on the in the dub. They'd hardly ever do that. They would probably go for another college kid at that point. Like, they've gotten a lot of guys with a lot of interesting upsides, and they keep accumulating. And, you know, I don't know if in the short term it's going to amount to much of anything, but I think, you know, I made the joke on Twitter today. It's only garbage time if you don't use it for something useful. And the idea being like, okay, if you're not thinking, you know, I always make this distinction when we're talking about rebuild versus retool. Rebuild/retool, whatever the hell you want to call it, doesn't mean you're trying to lose. It also doesn't mean you're not trying to win. It just means that you're not prioritizing winning immediately. It's not burn the boats. It's okay, let's figure out a way to prioritize and timeline the burning of the boats for 3 to 4 years down the road when we have enough boats to burn. And so how do you sequence things so that you have a critical mass of good to great players, or even just a lot of pretty good players, and then you can do something interesting? Because I think the previous regimes painted themselves into corners a bit in terms of how they manage the team. And you do that if you think you have a plan, and sometimes plans don't work out. And I get it. But now that it seems like, okay, you got to tear up that plan and come up with a new one. Great. Let's see what the new plan is, because I don't think we know what it is yet. Hopefully Craig does, but I don't think anyone knows what the plan is yet.
Nope. Very true. Good stuff. Provokes a lot of thought. We'll take a quick step back. Mike and Pike with you right here on Afterburner after a 6-3 Calgary Flames win over the Anaheim Ducks. You'll want to join us after this break. We've got a lot more to break down, including some of the big news out of the NHL today. Stick around.
We are well into the winter months now, and you can feel it, can't you? That urge to get away. Maybe some beach time to warm up those bones of yours. Maybe a hockey sports kind of road trip. Well, when you pack your bags, make sure you don't forget Alberta Blue Cross. There's only one thing better than sharing memories, and that's making new ones. Alberta Blue Cross travel insurance protects your memories and more wherever travel takes you. Visit ab.bluecross.ca/travel for more information. Alberta Blue Cross, celebrating life's memorable moments inspired by hockey.
Hey guys, it's Pinder. Chatting about Charm Diamond Centers. Did you know that Charm's been Canadian owned and operated since 1972? And there's over 85 locations coast to coast with Charm and their sister brands. Get this now. You want to get something custom made? How about custom ring building delivered in less than 4 weeks? That's unreal. That is the Charm Masterpiece Program, and they've got unbeatable pricing policies as well. Whether it's mine diamonds or Canadian lab-grown diamonds, check them out. For more information, go to charmdiamondcenters.com. That's charmdiamondcenters.com.
All right, gang, listen up. It's time to learn the pro pose. Coach?
Bend and snap.
Beautiful form. Nice arm extension. Facial expression? I could use some work. All right, let's see it. The pro pose. What's that guy doing?
I think that's the bend and snap.
That's a whole different deal. Mm.
Charm, home of the pro pose.
Oh! The only thing sweeter than the taste of victory is starting your day with the new Cinnabon Pull Apart from Wendy's. But there's no reason you can't have both now that Wendy's and Daily Faceoff Fantasy are giving you a chance to win weekly prizes all season long. And hey, even if you make a few wrong picks, at least you know you're heading to Wendy's right now for a $5 Cinnabon pull apart and a small coffee. It's a great choice. Sign up for the Daily Faceoff Survivor Pool sponsored by Wendy's and the Wendy's app. Let's get back to the hockey talk. Afterburner returns.
Pike and Mike back with you here on Afterburner after a 6-3 victory for the Calgary Flames over the Anaheim Ducks out at the Ponda in Anaheim, California, where the Calgary Flames struggled for so long. Boy, oh boy, they have not been struggling there of late. It just kind of goes to show, when you get to the very bottom of the league, where the Calgary Flames are kind of close to, but even at the very bottom, there are really levels to how bad teams can get in this league.
I mean, there's bad, and then there's San Jose and Chicago bad.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, the Calgary Flames, the thing that fans love to criticize about the Calgary Flames, and they might not be wrong to do so, is that they aren't often at that level. Now, I would say 2014, they were pretty darn close to the likes of Florida and Buffalo and those teams that were at the bottom of the standings. This year, they're close-ish. They're eighth from last, and obviously they have the incentive next year with the pick that they owe to Montreal to, you know, have a not-so-great retooling, rebuilding year. But it just gives you pause, makes you wonder, which direction are they going to go? Because I think, obviously, there is the preconceived notion in this market that they might try and shortcut their way out of it. That's not necessarily based on anything with Craig Conroy as the GM. There are some pre-existing people in the organization along with him, but next year, I know there's been talk about the Flames maybe being active in free agency. There's been lots of discussion about that. What do you envision being the case for this team next season, Pike?
I think they have a lot of flexibility. I mean, I think a lot of the things they do depend on what happens in goal. I mean, I was on with Frank and Yaremchuk today, and I would be shocked if Jacob Markstrom's still on this hockey club after the draft, just because it's a weird situation. And I think, you know, I don't think it's necessarily anybody's fault, but it's a weird situation that I'm not sure is it anyone's best interest to continue. But if you change out your goalie, all of a sudden you have a runway to give a lot of runway to Wolf, and you also potentially have a lot of assets you can get from that piece. And so I think they're going to be flexible. I think they have a really well built out data department. If you look at the work that Chris Snow, the late Chris Snow, did over the better part of a decade with the Flames, he built a data apparatus that's embedded in basically everything the Flames do. And if you look at some of the things they've done, it's that scouting apparatus and the data apparatus working in tandem that found Yegor Sharangovich, who is a guy whose underlying numbers suggested that he was probably better than anyone saying, oh, he's just a healthy scratch. I mean, he was healthy scratched, but he was better than what his role suggested. And that's turned out pretty well. They're the same guys that sort of pointed at Daniil Mirimanov as a guy that, hey, there's something there. Maybe you should take a look at him. And so far, so good on that. And very so good. I would argue that I think, you know, there's going to be a lot of opportunities this summer. And I think they're going to be trying to maintain some flexibility in terms of there's teams that have already spent their cap space. Vegas with the Noah Hanifin deal, even with, Robin Lehner on LTIR, does not have a lot of space. They're going to have to make some tough decisions. So, and they're not alone. There's a lot of teams that are already capped out. And so if you're the Flames and you come into the market with $20 million in cap space, granted with some guys to re-sign, but 20 mil will buy you a lot of different things. And you could use your picks and trade for someone's overpaid good player. Maybe they're good and paid like they're great. Fine. Flames got to figure out how they're going to get between the next, you know, from where they are to where they're going. And if they think that they can find somebody that's maybe a bit overpaid for what they are, but still has some upside, I think they're going to look at it. And failing that, I think, you know, you could see some strategic buys of specific free agents to fill in gaps. I maybe want to give yourself a little bit of flexibility on the center position, you know, find a utility forward that can sort of play all over the place. You know, I'll say this. I was a big fan of Paul Byron when he was an active player, because you could do whatever the hell you needed to do with Paul Byron. And he wasn't great at anything, but he was good at pretty much anything you needed him to do. And I think there's guys out there that can fill in gaps for you. I think they're going to be looking for another top four defenseman. I think they need a defensive minded guy who can sort of be a complement to all the offensive minded guys they have, because right now the guy with the best defensive minded, play, I mean, they got Uyghur, who's a high end guy, and they have Paul, who's sort of a third pair guy, and handling, I guess, but they don't, you know, you kind of need some different options for yourself. So I think those are the kind of things they're going to be looking at, sort of just where's there's value to be found. Because I think, you know, if you're Craig Conroy and you go into the season going, let's see what the data guys can come up with, or let's see what the scouts can come up with. They hit a home run with Sharangovich, and they hit it's hard to say if it's a home run yet with Mirimanov, but at the very least, a very well hit double. And if you're trying to, you know, looking for reasons to trust them with more kind of these experiments, I think they've already set up a good track record for themselves.
Lots of good stuff to chew on there. And I think we can chew on some more now with our DoorDash Hungry for More. That's the segue that gets me paid the big bucks right there. Pike, the Hungry for More What are you hungry for more of in the final, I don't even know, three, four games of this 23-24 regular season? I want you to go Flames-ish on this because I'm going to deviate from the game entirely with mine.
I'm shocked. I'm shocked that you're deviating. Honestly, I'd love to see a bit more Coronado, especially, you know, we saw a bit of him with Backlund and with, I think it was Sharon Govich last game. And, you know, I don't think it worked great simply because you're playing against LA and, you know, if you're on Backlund's line, you're going to be doing a lot of the heavy lifting. But I think if you can, especially with two home games in the last three games, I think you have the opportunity to sort of give a little bit more leash to Coronado in offensive situations and see what he can do. And I think, you know, you're going to want him to, you know, when the season's over on the 19th, he's going to the Wranglers for the playoffs. And so I think you want him going to Abbotsford for the last weekend of games with some swagger, with a bit of a chip on his shoulder. Because, you know, goodness knows, love the Wranglers. But I think right now they sort of lack that little bit of swagger that I think they're going to get a bit of when Dustin Wolf comes back, that they're going to get a bit of potentially when Solovyov gets back, because he covers up a lot of things for them. But of all the guys they have, of all the offensive needle movers they have in the system, especially, you know, it's on the Wranglers roster, you want Coronado coming out of the NHL season and the season in general feeling like he's got some momentum. And the easiest way to do that is to just ride the hell out of him in offensive situations the last three games and see what he can do for you.
I think that's a very reasonable way to answer that DoorDash prompt. If I'm the DoorDash driver right now, I'm taking a left turn off the road entirely because I'm not even going to talk about the Flames because I want to talk about a piece of big news that came out in the NHL today. This is my DoorDash hungry for more. I am hungry for more NHL hockey in Arizona. And what I mean by that,
normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
That is not Arizona Coyotes hockey in Arizona, because here's what I have to say. The big news of the day is the Arizona Coyotes are relocating. We've known about this for a couple of weeks. They're going to Utah. It's going to start next season. And quite frankly, Ryan Smith, the owner of the Utah Jazz, probably the best owner the franchise has ever had since its days in Winnipeg. He's probably going to elevate that team to respectability, which is something that it desperately needs. But here is my two cents, and the NHL is at 32 teams now. It just expanded, with Seattle and Vegas those last couple times. Here's what I will say about both Seattle and Vegas. If they had started in both those cities with the ownership that the Phoenix Coyotes and the Arizona Coyotes had, it would have been a complete abject failure. It is difficult to maybe make hockey succeed in Arizona, but it is very easy to make hockey fail anywhere with ownership that is as uncommitted to making a team succeed as the Coyotes had over their 27 years in the Valley. The fans there, and I hear you typing in the comments section, no, they don't have seven fans. They have very good fans, because the way that I know this, if you look up and down the state of Arizona, not just in Phoenix, not just in Tempe, if you go up north, if you go down south to Tucson, they are one of the fastest growing states in the country in terms of youth hockey enrollment, in terms of what the Phoenix Junior Coyotes are doing, in terms of what the Arizona Kachinas are doing in women's hockey. I work for the Okotoks Oilers. One of our top recruits for next season, our starting goaltender for next season, is a kid named Ben Vattis, who was the starting goaltender for the Phoenix Junior Coyotes. That'd be something 20 years ago you never see.
One of the most exciting Flames prospects in the system is Jaden Lipinski from Scottsdale, Arizona.
He's from Scottsdale, Arizona. So that's my point. This is just my point that I want to hammer home for the people watching who I'm sure are going to say hockey has failed in Arizona. My counterpoint to that is that hockey has not failed in Arizona, and NHL hockey has not failed in Arizona. The Arizona Coyotes have failed in Arizona, and that is a completely different ballgame, because when you have owners like the Morello Group who treat a sports franchise as a commercial asset and as a value proposition instead of trying to build a fan base with an actual plan, this is what you get. And it would have failed in Vegas if they had owned the team there. It would have failed in Seattle had they owned the team there.
Do you know what happened in the 70s in this market? Professional hockey failed in Calgary before the National Hockey League. The Calgary Cowboys folded because they just, in the way they were being run, like, pro hockey is not an easy thing to do. And especially, you know, in the 70s, it was the NHL was the be all end all. The WHA tried to change that to moderate and then to basically no success. Very quickly became no success. And the Calgary Cowboys were a fun hockey team in a secondary market in a secondary league that just couldn't make it work. And then suddenly when Nelson Skalbania and all his partners bought the Flames from Atlanta in 80 and basically did what they had to do to get shovels in the ground for a building, because the Olympics were coming and we'd get the Olympics if they got shovels in the ground, it worked. And so I agree with you, Mike, if you have the right people in the right circumstances doing things in the right way, it can work. Seattle in a lot of ways shouldn't have worked. There's too many teams already in Seattle. There's too many sports in Seattle. You're not going to be able to make hockey work in a state like Washington State with all those other things going on. It'll never work. It's worked out great. It's been fantastic, because I think they found a really nice way in Washington State complementarities with the other levels of hockey. And it seems like it fit like a glove. The Kraken are a success story. And their success story in a completely different way than Vegas has been. Vegas has been a success story because I think they figured out in a very weird geographic area how to make it work for a region. And they were really open-eyed about it, and they did their homework. And I think they knew, okay, we're only going to get one crack at doing this correctly, so let's just do this correctly. And, you know, I can't say enough good things about how important the Golden Knights have been to that community. And I think Arizona, there's so many people there, and it's such a cool little area. It's such a weird place in the best possible way a place can be weird. And hopefully they get another chance. Hopefully they get another chance.
They will. And my last take on this, and I have a couple stories that I want to tell, and I'm going to get into them, but I want a team in Quebec City. I do. I realize it's probably not viable in terms of what the NHL wants. I get it. I want a team there. I want 36 teams. I think the way that the talent in this league is progressing forward, I think we are going to see an explosion, an influx of talent. And that's as the game continues to grow in places like Phoenix and in places like Atlanta and in places wherever. But what I'm going to say is what I witnessed, and there's going to be a lot of stories coming out, and there have been a lot of stories over the last few years. We saw what Katie Strang had to write about the Coyotes back in 2021 in The Athletic. There have been stories that Frank Saravalli has written and voiced over at Daily Faceoff. I was at the very first NHL game played at Mullet Arena. It was in October 2022. It was against, I believe, the New York Rangers. The Coyotes lost. I was at a bunch of games this season. I was at the vote in Tempe. I was at their party when they lost, and the Tempe voters rejected them.
Correct me if I'm wrong, you were preparing to figure out a way to get down there for that the auction, weren't you?
I was going to, and now I'm going to be in Utah. I'm going to go to Utah for the start of next season because I'm interested in seeing how they do. But what I will say is just the sheer incompetence, and I am referring specifically to ownership here. I'm not referring to any of the PR people who I dealt with, just to name a few, Rich Nairn, Jeffrey Sanders, Luke Johns, all outstanding people, so many great people in Arizona. I couldn't say enough good things about the people who watch the hockey there. The fans are the most devoted fans. The number of things that they have had to put up with, the number of scandals they have had to overcome, but the sheer incompetence put on display by Coyotes ownership, especially since Alex Morello took over, the stories that are going to come out are absolutely preposterous. And it is the thing that sticks in my mind is that when they moved into Mullet Arena, they didn't even put Shane Doan's banner up in the standing or up in the rafters, which they, I think they had license to do. They even hung the banners. They had banners that were they created for a couple of their fans and workers who had died via cancer. And they had hung them from the restaurant on the concourse during their cancer awareness night, that night. But they couldn't do the same for Shane Doan, the franchise legend. And in fact, they don't even currently have that banner in their possession, because I know who does. It's a friend of mine who works at Mullet Arena. It's not the team. They just lost track of it. And it goes beyond. The owner is a guy named Alex Morello, who's this businessman. His son is the team's chief brand officer. He runs their Twitter account. They have interns who run the Twitter account. They have actual employees as well. But he, if you have seen over the last year, and you undoubtedly have, a questionable tweet that has been posted on the Arizona Coyotes Twitter account, like what they posted after the election, which is, where should we play next season, in Scottsdale, Tempe, or when just 2 days ago, after the news came out that they were likely to be relocating to Salt Lake City, they post a tweet saying that we are going to be committed to Arizona. Well, they knew full well that they were negotiating with the NHL and Salt Lake City to undercut their own fans. I swear to God, and I'm getting a little flustered here, but if you are blaming any of this on the fans in Arizona for not turning up to that team's games, not watching them, imagine how you would act if in Calgary you had an owner who looked at you with such callous disrespect and no appreciation for what you have gone through. That's all I'll say. But I am just, Alex Morello and his son and Javier Gutierrez should never be allowed to set foot in a hockey arena again.
I'll give a shout out to our dear friend Rob Kerr. Rob always describes owning a sports franchise as sort of being part of a public trust. You're running something that should be really important for your community. And if you do it properly, it should be important for your community. And worst case scenario, you want to run your team in a way that if for whatever reason it doesn't work out, fans are nostalgic for the brand, for what the team represented for them. And like Winnipeg Jets hockey, for example, the dollar sucked and it wasn't a big market. That's the thing that killed the Winnipeg Jets. It wasn't that the fans, you know, thumb their nose at ownership or anything. I think I have a lot of friends who look back really fondly on the old Smythe division and the old Jets, because the old Jets were fun. You had Timo Solani and like it was a really well-run organization, and it just things went against them. And thankfully, I think it's really exciting for Winnipeg that they got a second chance, because I think the market deserved it, the fans deserved it. But you want to run your team in a way that makes people, you know, you want people to say, like, not everything is going to work. I mean, Atlanta, bless their hearts, they might be getting a third crack at it. The Atlanta Flames, they gave it their level best chance. They did their best. The Atlanta Thrashers, they did their best. And I think a lot of people, even semi-ironically, but they look back on the quote-unquote failures in Atlanta, and you go, man, that was weird, but they tried their best. They did their best. And I think that's all you can really ask of people, to do their best. And, you know, I think there's a lot of people in the Coyotes organization who've been trying their best, and there's been some hindrances, let's say. Let's be polite say there have been some hindrances to them succeeding in the way they would like to. And hopefully they get another chance. Hopefully the fans get another chance, because shit, it sucks to lose your team. I mean, I'm old as shit. I remember the Cannons. I was nostalgic for the Cannons because they were just weird and fun, and we had snow outs. You ever watch a baseball game and go, oh shit, it's gonna snow? That was the Calgary Cannons experience. It was awesome. I feel so bad for people who weren't around here in the 90s, because it was such a weird experience and I loved every second of it. That's, you want people to, worst case scenario, you want people to look back on the experience they had with your franchise and go, wasn't that a blast? It was destined to fail for reasons that aren't our fault, but damn, it was fun. Baseball in Calgary, I have no idea how it lasted as long as it did. It was weird as hell. It was awesome.
I'm trying to remember, the Blue Jays had a pitcher a couple of years ago who played for the Cannons. And I'm trying to remember who it was, but he was a relief pitcher who I think was like 40 by the time that he got to Blue Jays. And I think he was like the last one still in baseball. But yeah, no, talk about losing a team. It sucks. And that's all I'll say about that. That is our DoorDash hungry for more. With restaurants, grocery, pharmacies, bakeries, flower shops, and more, DoorDash really has everything you need. Ordering is easy. Just open the DoorDash app, choose what you want from where you want, and your items will be left safely outside your door with our default contactless delivery setting. For a limited time, our listeners can get 25% off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code NATION25. Dash that for the win. You know, Pike, I've got, and the thing is, I've got nothing against Utah getting a team. I think it's an interesting market for the NHL to go into. I think I was a little critical of them a couple of days ago, opening up my mind a little bit, thinking about it a little bit more. It's going to be interesting. They're going into a market that is relatively untapped. And the other thing is, I don't know if people realize this, but the Coyotes, aside from their horrible, horrible ownership, the last three or so years, their hockey operations department has done quite a good job, I would say so, and in getting Logan Cooley, Dylan Gunther, Clayton Keller is still there. Josh Doan has come up. He scored again tonight. Matias Michelli's come up. It's going to be interesting because in order to build that fan base right away, you need a winner. And I think had the Coyotes stuck around in Arizona, I would have been very skeptical of that terrible, terrible owner's capability to pay to make that team better than it currently was. In Utah with Ryan Smith, part of me, again, is just devastated for the fans in Arizona. I really hope they get another chance. I'm sure they will. The other part of me is saying to myself right now, those players are going to get a chance with a committed owner to play for something meaningful. And that to me, and for the fans in Utah, who I think we shouldn't overstate, that's a city that has had the Winter Olympics, that might have the Winter Olympics again soon. It's something where if all goes well, and I might have been too dismissive of this possibility 2 days ago, it's really feeding into my mind now. If all goes well, it could turn a market or a franchise that was really just not working into a team that could really work.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to get goodwill first year because it's new and new things are fun. And then bloody hell, it better be good after that. I think it's going to be, but it's going to be weird. You and I talked off air. They have a new building coming. The IOC is, I think, in July before the Summer Olympics, they're going to determine who gets the next two Olympics. It sounds like 2030, we'll probably be going to some areas in France. I believe the mountain areas near the Alps, they have a couple of different areas that are sort of combining for a bid. And 2034 will be Salt Lake City again. And so they're going to need a new building. So they're good. And they have different levels of government working to work with Ryan Smith and his group to sort of put together a new building. I think they're playing out of the Delta Center.
Delta Center. Yeah.
Delta Center.
Which seats, officially, the Delta Center seats 14,000 for hockey. The last hockey game that was played there had a capacity of 10,460. I believe there were sections of the upper level that were cordoned off, but we saw it in Mullet where the original capacity was 5,000. The NHL had to take away some of the seats to get its stuff in there.
They got down to 4,600. Yeah. So they lost 400 seats because of things that the NHL needs. So they're going to have to spend some money over the offseason getting that building up to snuff. And then they're going to basically, you know, I have a lot of confidence in a billionaire's ability to do something cool if he's getting some, he's going to have some help because, you know, the Utah is an area that has some money right now. And that's going to be fun. It's going to be interesting. So, but yeah, it's going to be a little bit weird for the first few years. It'll be a lot like Calgary was early on, where they're playing in a building that they'd already outgrown. And then pretty soon you have a newer building, a cooler building across the street or down the road or something. So yeah, it's going to be pretty exciting, I think. And I think a lot of people, you know, I don't think we're saying Nation vacation to Salt Lake City yet, but we're not saying it because it could be kind of weird and fun. I mean, I think we all love things that are very weird, and I'm kind of jealous now I didn't get a chance to go down to Mullet when I had the chance, because I told Pinder,
I'll go next year.
I didn't want to have to rearrange stuff, man. I didn't want to have to rearrange stuff, and now I won't have the chance.
I will forever have bragging rights about that. I saw, I think, 7 games at Mullet Arena, and I was in the temporary locker rooms that they had set up, where it was at the community iceplex. What some people don't know about Mullet Arena is it's got 2 sheets of ice in it, and they have a second sheet next door that is just sort of your standard. That's a community rink. People kept calling Mullet Arena a community rink. The community rink was next door. But while they were
Mullet had at least a few hundred more seats than the average community rink.
Yeah, that is true. But while they were still building the permanent dressing rooms that ended up being a sunk cost for Alex Morello, the terrible, terrible, terrible owner, they had the temporary dressing rooms that blew up on social media. Everybody saw them. They looked like curtains. They were these curtains that were put up, and they had these like chairs. They had like these folding chairs that the players were. That was the most Bush League thing I've ever seen in the NHL. I understand it was temporary, but it was so Bush League. And I talked to, I got the chance to interview Ryan Reeves about it. We went into the Rangers dressing room as media after the game. And I talked to Keandre Miller and Alexi Lafreniere and Ryan Reeves. And Ryan Reeves described it perfectly. He said, "It's a little bit poo-poo." That was his quote to me about the dressing rooms at Mullet. The new ones that they put in were great, but the temporary ones, that was just a complete gong show. And there's not a whole lot that I can say more about that. Utah getting the Olympics is pretty cool. We'll see how that goes. Just makes you kind of yearn for what could have been if Calgary had maybe gotten that 2026 bid. Maybe someday, Pike. Maybe after they get the rink. Who knows?
Maybe the World Juniors. Well, we're in the rotation.
Hey, I'd settle for the World Juniors. I'd settle for the World Juniors in Calgary. We need more events. We need more cool stuff.
Between us and Edmonton, I don't think we're going to have any shortage of events in Alberta.
No, that is true. And you know what? Hey, it's good. It's good that we have the infrastructure because for so long it was not here. And folks, you want to know what it would have felt like to lose your team? I mean, I am not pro handouts in any respect. I think that the deal that the Flames, you know more about arena financing than I do. I think that the deal that they got, I'm just going to take it at face value. I am of the opinion that sports team owners should buy their own rinks. But we're not going to get into that philosophical debate right now. But you don't want to be going down the road that fans in Arizona are going down right now. And that's something that with the Flames, it was a near miss. And it could have happened. Like it was something that was discussed. And I get that the Flames do well. They're a cash cow in some respects, but at a certain point you got to get a building, and it was close here. There was a period of time where it was not looking great.
The old owners were on the record of saying that they were losing significant amounts of money between about the mid-90s and early 2000s. So
yeah,
it was far, far closer than anyone really wants to admit publicly that the yeah. Flames could have left very easily. Same with the Oilers. They were both extremely, extremely close to being the next Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah. Nope. It can't be overstated. And now we've got some really interesting sports here in Southern Alberta. We've got the Flames, got my Okotoks Oilers playing game 3 tomorrow. Looking forward to that at Okotoks Centennial Arena. And we've got some games coming up for the Calgary Flames. Just a few more left on the docket this season, Pike, for the Calgary Flames. That's going to bring us to our road ahead, which is brought to you by Village Honda. And Pike, the Flames have wrapped up their 3-game California road trip, but they've got a couple games coming up. They're going to play those very same Arizona Coyotes in just a couple of days, and what will be the final meeting between those two teams, the Coyotes' final ever road game before they relocate to Utah. And then the Flames will play the Canucks in Vancouver before finishing their season, just as they did last year, with a home date against the San Jose Sharks. Just your thoughts on those last 3 games, what they mean for this team.
They'll each be 60-minute games with the possibility of extra time to determine who gets the 2 points. The Flames will dress 2 goaltenders and 18 skaters, rather, and they will be playing from left to right and then from right to left and then left to right again. They're going to be games. I mean, the Coyotes don't have anything to play for. The Canucks will be playing for potentially clinching the division, so they're going to be pretty motivated on Tuesday. And on Thursday, I mean, it's going to be – I'm very curious what the lineups look like for the teams going forward, because, you know, the Wranglers played Thursday, Friday. They're off until next Friday, Saturday when they're in Abbotsford. So potentially you could see some guys getting shut down, some guys being day-to-day for some stuff, and then, different bodies coming in. I'm kind of curious how it's gonna go because there's a lot of variables. So honestly, I'm at the point now where I'm willing to be surprised. I'm gonna go to the rink and go, let's see what happens, because honestly, these are the types of games where maybe you're gonna see something cool and weird. And why do we get into this business if not to see something cool and weird every now and then?
Absolutely right. Hey, that's why I went to Mullet Arena. And yeah, you got to include the Wranglers in the road ahead because they're going to the playoffs. They're in seventh place in the Pacific Division. They lost today, but it's just going to be a matter of who they play. They're going to go on the road for their best of three series to start things off, and maybe they'll come back home after that if they make it through. Keep tuned to the Barnburner Flames Nation YouTube channel because we're cooking things up. We're going to have a Wranglers show that we're going to try and put together. I don't know if we're going to loop in Pike on that. I've been talking to Cammy Koepke about that. Been talking to people with the Wranglers for that. We want to get some guests on. We're going to just talk all things Flames prospects. That's going to be something coming up very, very soon because there's lots to talk about. They got Jaden Lipinski. They got Etienne Morin. They've got Sam Honzik when and if he comes back this season. That's a team that, you know, I've said on this show is maybe at its most depleted in terms of its roster construction since I have started covering this team. And you know what? That's an ebb and flow. That's not a criticism of any of the individual players. It's the nature of the American Hockey League. It is very difficult to maintain your position at the top of the standings or at the bottom of the standings. You go up and down unless you're an independently owned team like the Chicago Wolves, and who knows how long that will even be the case with the Chicago Wolves. But for the Wranglers, they have remained competitive, which I think is a testament to the job that Trent Cull has done and a testament to some of the veterans on the roster and also some players who maybe have been overlooked in the past, like Rory Karens, providing that secondary offense. Pike, it's a very interesting team to watch.
I didn't hear the name Ben Jones from you, the only guy who's played every Wranglers game this year, and I think that's an outrage, sir. Good day to you. They're a team that – if you're doing your job well in the American League, you're going to lose all your best players. And Ryan Huska has been on record very complimentary towards his counterpart in the American League because he flat out said, like, we've taken their best guys. Their MVP goalie is here. Their most engaged physical presence in Martin Pospisil is here. One of their more versatile forwards here, Connor Zary. Matt Coronado, their most consistent offensive difference maker here. Half their blue line got pulled up to the NHL level at various points. Like, they've been gutted at times. They've been relying on ECHL call-ups. ECHL all-star Patrick Kudla was here for a bit. They've been basically pulling in a lot of different guys. And I think you have to, you know, in addition to giving, you know, shout outs to the whole coaching staff down there, because they've done a hell of a job with at times a ramshackle team. They've also, you know, you got to give a shout out to Brad Pascal because they've the guys that you mentioned, the AHL lifers, the guys who sort of been the backbone of that team. They're guys that Brad Pascal and the staff went out and found. And, you know, you obviously, if you have a guy like Brett Sutter who wants to come home and be the captain on that team, you do it. You don't even think about it. But you also look at, you know, Mitch McClain's been real good. Colton Poolman's been real good. Like, they've had a lot of those kind of guys. You know, Oscar Dance just got nominated for the AHL Player of the Year for the second, or Man of the Year for the second year in a row for his off-ice work. There's a lot of good things going on with the Wranglers, and hopefully they get a chance to play some home games during the postseason, because it'd be a kind of a shame for they've been a success story. It's in 2 years, you know, it's been a success story in this market, and it'd be kind of a shame if they didn't get a chance to play some playoff home games this year.
That's great. Yeah, it's totally true. Let's loop it back around. That was the Village Honda Road Ahead. Go to the Northwest Auto Mall and online at villagehonda.com. We have new in-stock inventory on the ground. Start your automotive adventures at Village Honda, where new vehicle pricing is MSRP. And hey, folks, it's as though Honda designed the CR-V for Calgary and its unpredictable weather. No matter what the conditions are, the CR-V stands top the pack among compact SUVs. You can feel confident behind the wheel of your CR-V as Honda has included a plethora of driver safety features that comes standard. Hey, Honda CR-V, that thing's been kicking around for years. Hey, they got the Honda Passport too, if you want something a little bit bigger. So all sorts of things. Go to Village Honda. That's your road ahead. Wranglers, Flames, lots of stuff coming up. Pike, that Wranglers team's going to be good next year, you know, with the guys they've got coming in terms of Honzik, Morin, you know, Yermo is going to be in there as well. Lipinski potentially. You know who I wonder about, and you're going to laugh when I say this, because it kind of lets them go both ways in terms of bringing in a veteran who also has ties to the city, is a free agent at the end of the season, is a guy who can give you games in the NHL if you need him to, didn't really get a shot to when he was here last time. Pike, I might have to dust out those old Matthew Phillips columns, because I think he'd be a very good piece to put next to a guy like Samuel Hanza kind of scoring. He's a perfect mentor piece. He's a leader. I think he'd be a great fit in the American League for this Wranglers team.
It depends what else they have going on.
I think the challenge is,
what would he bring that other guys don't? I think that's the big challenge.
That's the thing. And it's always something you got to balance, right? And with the American League this year, a player like that would have been exactly what they needed. Now, I know there are going to be people who say, hey, Mike, aren't you the one who compared that player to Marty St. Louis and said he'd be the next? No, I never said he'd be like Marty St. Louis. I said he might be like a Tyler Ennis type player. He went to Washington, didn't quite pan out, but this is the kind of guy who can make hay in the American League. And you know what? He makes them watchable, and he makes them, fans love him. He's the kind of guy who fans come to watch because he's fun at that level, but he's also not the kind of guy who you have to hinge your future to. It's just some little head candy for the Wranglers, because I think it's something that would make a lot of sense both in terms of now and helping usher along their future players. But that's a topic for another day. We can talk about that on our Wranglers show whenever we end up doing that. That's probably going to be at the end of the month because the Wranglers, I think, go until April 21st. So we'll have that up. We'll make sure it's available live. I'm not sure if it'll be live or if it'll be recorded. We'll get you more details on that on the Flames Nation YouTube channel. Jack, we're running a little long here, but do we have any questions from the fine folks? Because I know it's past midnight here, but if anybody said anything of value, we'll get it up on the screen if you got something. There we go. Monty Rye asks, in a 2023 redraft, oh boy, the words 2023 redraft make me feel, wasn't 2023 just, you know, yesterday? But anyway, where would Hanzik be selected, and who should the Flames have picked at their spot? I think I know what Pike's going to say, and I'm going to agree with him for the most part, assuming that what he says, it's kind of too early. And I think, you know, you kind of rely on your scouts.
I think they're happy with the guy they got. Outside of like the first few picks, you judge drafts with calendars, not by stopwatches. So I think they're pretty happy with the guy they got.
Yeah. I mean, what are you going to say? Because like, look, there are guys who went after Sam Hanzik in last year's draft who I really, really like. I like what Axel Sandin Pelikka has done in Sweden in his draft plus one season. I love what Gabe Perreault has done in the NCAA in his draft plus one season. Quentin Musty has had an incredible year in the Ontario Hockey League, but you do not draft guys based on what they do in their draft plus one season. You draft them based on what they can do as professionals, and not just in the American League, but in the NHL. And we've seen guys have years that have been derailed by injuries before. And I think this is a cut and dried case of a player who, I mean, I'm not one to speculate, but I don't know if Sam Hanzik has been healthy all season, because he's been in and out. He's had so many rough goes of it.
I think he had five games. Wes Gilbertson at Post Media did a nice one-on-one with him. I think that's on the Post Media site right now. He got an abdominal injury in the preseason, in the last preseason game. I think he took a weird hit or something. Was basically out. I can't remember exactly what it was, but he was out for, I think, until December. Came back, played 2 weeks, went to the World Juniors he was basically gone for a month. First game back, he took either a stick or a puck in the face, and he had some sort of a jaw injury, but he could play with it. So he wore the bubble for basically the rest of the season. So, you know, some guys just have terrible luck. Like last year at the World Juniors, some guys skate caught him in the leg in the second game in, and he missed the entire World Juniors. So it's like, and that cost him like a good chunk of the year, because if you get a bad laceration, you can't do shit until everything heals, because, you know, you can bleed out. There's a lot of stuff that can go wrong if you have a bad cut. And so he had some just atrocious injury luck, almost Yusuf Valimaki level atrocious injury luck. So you're just hoping the guy can hang out.
Yeah. I don't think you're pinning the fate of the franchise on Samuel Hanzik. I think it would be incredibly disingenuous to do so. I think you're hoping you can get a good player out of him. It's you're hoping you can get somebody. The way that I like to see it, say it, is you like having these guys be slotted properly. And one of the best ways that you do that is you push them down and you draft guys higher so they can go lower and the expectations aren't as high, so they can overperform where they are. And that's where you have the ideal performances of a guy like Blake Coleman, where a couple of years ago when the Flames had Gaudreau, Tkachuk, all those guys, Blake Coleman was on their third line. you could say their second line, third line, whatever you want to call it. They had brought in Toffoli. So basically by default, Coleman was their number three right winger. And when you have Blake Coleman as your number three right winger, you're doing some damage. Now with Sam Hanzik, you have Hanzik, Coronado. Coronado's right side. But you have Hanzik and Jacob Pelche. Well, you don't really have that guy at the very top. You don't have the Matthew Tkachuk. You don't even have, I mean, you don't necessarily have a guy who profiles to be as good a 35 goal scorer like Andrew Mangiapane was at his very best with the Calgary Flames. You might have that if Jacob Pelche turns out, but that's a big if at this point. So you want that guy who you can draft, who you can push those guys down and slot properly. I think once the Flames start making these picks for a couple of years, if a guy like Hanzik comes in and turns into an NHL player, it's no longer a thought of, oh, that guy is maybe disappointing relative to where he was drafted. The thought is, oh, this guy has found money. I have pinned my hopes on the likes of Tiija Ginla and the likes of whoever we've picked with our, whichever center we've gotten with our number one pick in 2025. I'm not even really thinking of Hanzik at this point as a guy who is the guy who is centering my hopes and dreams in this franchise, but he comes in and he just continues to develop and does what he does best. You might have that guy coming in while the other guys who you've drafted high are coming in as well. That can create a cascading effect that would really benefit the Flames. So it's tough to say. There's a lot that can still happen. There's a lot that can go wrong. There's a lot that can go right. I think, Pike, you nailed it. It's really too early. Jack, do we have anything more?
You prefer him to not be injured, but
yeah,
it is what it is.
Yeah. Jack, any more? Here we go. Can you please? Okay, this is good. Can you please talk about Coronado? He looks good some games, but I don't know why he isn't producing. Does he need more minutes? I can tell you why he's not producing. And you know what? Somebody brought up a really interesting comparable for Coronado today, which I hadn't even thought about, because the comparable who I've always thought about with Coronado was Mike Camilleri. But I've kind of backed off of that because Camilleri to me was always kind of fluid in his movements. And Coronado to me is not all that fluid yet. He hasn't had the skating training, I don't think, with that he necessarily needs yet to be that guy. But there's a bit of Travis Konecny in him. And that is an extremely lofty bar, considering that Konecny is the Philadelphia Flyers' leading scorer. He's a point-of-game player. But just stylistically, if, and it's a big if, Coronado can find that pace. He was picked ahead of where Konecny was in his draft year. There is no reason to believe that Coronado won't eventually come around, because when you come to the end of it, he's in his draft plus three season, I think. He is 20, 21 years old. He's playing in the NHL, which is extremely difficult to do for a player at that age who is coming off seasons in college where he was playing 30 games in the season.
Yeah, he's played a shit ton of hockey this year, and I think for him, it's one of those things where at some point the schedule gets to you, at some point the grind of the playing style gets to you, at some point it's just, you know, you can get away with shit in the AHL or in the NCAA you cannot get away with in the NHL. And I think he's looked better and better on, especially this last recall, the last few weeks, he's looked quite good. And I think the details of this game are a lot better. We talked to Ryan Huska about this a couple weeks ago, and he was very complimentary about Coronado. He's getting there. And I think he's one of those guys that I would argue that part, if you look at one of the reasons why he's not producing right now is, let's be blunt, he's playing on the fourth line. He's, you know, it's garbage time in the season. He's playing on the fourth line. The fourth line guys are good hands, but they're not really producers. You don't expect Kevin Rooney to be moving the needle offensively. You're expecting Kevin Rooney to make sure there's no damage done against your team while he's on the ice. That's kind of his whole gig. And, you know, if you're putting up points with Kevin Rooney, I'd say good for you. You're doing better than I expected. If you're not putting up points, as long as you're not getting your head kicked in offensively, I go, okay, yeah, you're probably doing fine. And what we've learned is Coronado can be completely adequate as a fourth line winger. It's not a skill set, but he's a smart enough guy that he can get away with it. I want to see him in sort of more offensive situations because he's got something. And if he's put with guys that can sort of help him elevate, I think he could unlock some stuff in him.
All right. Seeing some folks in the comments here, and I just want to clarify what I said about Matt Coronado, because CeraVe, I'm not comparing Travis Konecny to Matt Coronado. I'm not comparing the two players as they currently stand right now. Travis Konecny is a player who has 67 points, 32 goals this season. They're obviously not comparable players right now. When Travis Konecny was Matt Coronado's age, he was in the NHL. He was scoring less than half a point per game on a Flyers team that, if memory serves, was okay, didn't quite make the playoffs. He was getting pretty plum usage, if memory serves. He was a 24th overall pick in his draft year. He didn't have overwhelming production in the Ontario Hockey League. I get Travis Konecny has turned into the focal point on a Flyers team that is sort of in the midst of a transitionary stage. My point is not to compare the two players as they currently stand. My point is just to say these are players who I think have similar attributes in their games. Now, with Coronado, you're not looking at a guy who is currently an impact player in the NHL. I have a litany of issues with Coronado's game, and there are issues that I'm sure the Flames have too, because the production hasn't been there. You can't dispute that. You can't argue with the facts that he has, what, 2 goals this season? It just hasn't clicked. And a lot of this season, Matt Coronado has been skating around, and I have not liked the way that he has skated. I haven't liked his stride. I haven't liked his poise with and without the puck. It just, there have been aspects of it that just haven't been there. And I think the Flames would say similar things if you asked them, and they responded truthfully. And even in the American League, there have been things that he's had to work on where I think he has generated a lot of his offense off of turnovers. I don't think he's been particularly strong off the rush. So this is not me saying that Matt Coronado is a flawless player who's going to turn into Travis Konecny. This is simply me saying that if the stars align, like in 1997's Hercules, instead of Hercules being able to be defeated by the Titans, Matt Coronado might be able to turn into a 60, 70 point player in the future. This is not me saying that Matt Coronado is going to be that player, because if I could prognosticate that right now, I think I'd be making a lot more money than I am right now.
I just think he's learning how to play pro hockey, and it's, the NHL is not a great developmental league because it's tough to learn lessons in the NHL. The AHL, I think, is, you know, we saw him in October. The music between the notes, as they say, wasn't quite there yet. He's one of those guys that in offensive situations, very good player. Getting into those offensive situations on his own, not quite there yet. He's closer than he was in October. He's made a lot of strides, but he's also the kind of guy that I think in the exit meetings when the Wranglers are done, I think they're going to sit down with him. They're going to have a lot of things for him to work on, but he's also the kind of guy that I think right now he's in those 50-50 battles a lot. He's losing a lot of them because he's just physically underdeveloped. He's going to go away. He's going to watch some video. He's going to learn. He's going to gain 5 to 8 pounds of muscle, and then he's going to win some of those battles. He's not a finished product. He's 21 years old, and he's, you know, this time last year, he was worried about final exams, and now he's playing a regular shift in the NHL. He doesn't look terrible. He looks, you know, pretty decent. So for a guy that they picked late in the first round, I think you look at that and go, okay, well, I forget what the hell is he, 12th, 13th, something like 13th. He was 13th. Middle of the first round in a draft that was fine. He was, you know, not the world's greatest draft, but, you know, he's going to have to fill out his game a bit. And I think they know that. And I think he knows that. And he's already started the process. So.
Yeah. All we can do at this point is speculate on the range of outcomes. And for me, if everything goes right, again, he's, I think he could be as good as a player like Travis Konecny. I think there's a possibility. I think there is a far larger probability that he ends up being what a lot of people in the comments are saying right now, where he turns into a very good middle six winger and you're very happy with him. He turns into maybe an Andrew Mangiapane guy where you love him when he's making $2 million, when he's making $5 million, maybe you're a little bit softer on him. And the worst case is he doesn't really improve from where he is right now and he fizzles out. And that happens to guys. I'm not sitting here and saying he's going to be any one of those three things. I just think that with the way that he plays, there are things that he does so well. His shot is just fantastic, and he's a very smart player. So I think there's a possibility that he turns into a very useful piece for this Flames team. Jack, I think you've got one more question for us. Let's fire it up. Okay, here we go. All right, we kind of touched upon this off the top, but let's just do a little bit of a quick dive on it again. Phil Blunt says, what are the Flames going to do with Kuzmenko? There's no way they're not signing this guy. Boy, Phil, you know, to be blunt with you, I don't really know. I don't really know. They've got time to play with here. He has had one hell of a run here with the Flames. He's scoring at half a goal per game pace. He's got 13 goals in 26 games with the Flames. It just comes down to his age. It comes down to what he's going to want. This is a guy who's 28 years old. He'll be 29 when his next contract kicks in. Does he want to take a 2-year deal? Because if so, I'd sign him. But if he wants to take a 6-year deal, I'd say, you know what? We're going to trade you for the best thing we can get.
He is shooting 26%.
Yeah.
almost nobody is a regular 26% player. He's on a hell of a heater. When he was asked to play defense in Vancouver, he was a 13% player shooting. He's a 26% shooting player right now. Even shooting 26%, he's minus 10. He is, I'll be very mean here, he's one-dimensional. He's, when he's on a heater, he's fantastic at that one dimension. But it's just a question of how much do you want to spend on a power play specialist?
Yeah, I mean, he's Rene Bourque. He's a transitional player. And that's not just to say that he's good in transition in the neutral zone, but he is a player for the transition of this franchise. And he is going to fill a gap. And there is nothing wrong with that. Many players have been compensated very handsomely for filling gaps. The Flames have paid many players to do just that. I think back to the mid-2010s when they had Lee Stempniak do just that for them for a couple of seasons. They had Mike Camilleri come back and do that for them for a few seasons. And Bourque was here for a while. They traded him for Camilleri in the end. But talk about a guy who was streaky, who had oodles of skill, maybe a bit of a better shooter than Kuzmenko is, but... really, when it comes down to it, Kuzmenko has turned into quite the good finisher in the end of it, because you look at last year when he had 39 goals, his shooting percentage last year, I think, was 28%. 23.
So 27.
Yeah. So you think about it, unless, okay, here, there are two outcomes that I see here, two possibilities. Either Andre Kuzmenko is the best finisher in NHL history. Either he is outstanding at scoring goals to a rate that exceeds even that of Alex Ovechkin. And he was just on a slump earlier this year. Rick Tocchet didn't quite jive with him, but when he's deployed, probably he's the best shooter ever. Or he's going to start going down a little bit here pretty quick. And there's nothing wrong with that. Again, there's nothing wrong with that, but it's something where I would be wary of saying, okay, Andre, we've seen you score 13 goals in 26 games with us. Now we want to put pen to paper. I think back to when Alexander Semin played with the Carolina Hurricanes. After he was let go by the Capitals, he had a huge year with them. It was a lockout shortened season, so it was a smaller sample of games. He parlays that into a 5-year deal with the Hurricanes, and they ended up getting nothing for him. And when after the first year, they probably could have sold him at a high and gotten something crazy. He played 20 games with Montreal after that, and he was out of the league. And he went over to metallurgical school in Russia. So it's something where with Kuzmenko, do you want to do the same thing?
How dare you disrespect the fine people of Magnitogorsk?
Magnitogorsk. Well, no. I'm saying he. I think Alexander Semin went to study metallurgy in Russia. Like I don't know if he played for Metallurg Magnitogorsk. I think he went to a school for metallurgy. You can look this up. Alexander Semin. He was studying this. I just remember this story coming in. I think that was after he retired. But either way, I mean, he was not in the NHL.
Yeah, honestly, if you just keep him on the contract he's in now for another year, he walks at the end of the year, you look at it and go, okay, you got a couple years, you got some gains out of a guy that may or may not have helped you. All right. You needed to fill a role anyway. Good for you. And you know, if you can turn it into something, either you keep him at a rate you like, or you flip him for something. I think there's value to be had there. I think it's just a question of what they perceive the value to be. But, you know, he's been good so far. And for a team that the power play has been, I think, calling it pedestrian would be extremely polite early in the season. It was below pedestrian. It was just downright awful. They're downright fun to watch right now. And, you know, if you can figure out how to bottle that up and bring it to the next season and figure out a way to divvy it out a bit more evenly, maybe there's a conversation to be had.
Yeah, I think undeniably he has made their power play better. And I just want to address a couple of comments here because I think they're bringing up good points that I just want to touch upon here quickly because we got to get off the show. We're going a little bit late here. But just two things that people have said. You know, I don't think it's analytics to say that you don't necessarily, if you're a retooling, rebuilding team, you don't necessarily want to sign a 29-year-old player to a long-term contract. I don't think it's any different than with Elias Lindholm and Noah Hanifin. And I understand Kuzmenko is performing far better right now than Elias Lindholm ever did in his last two seasons with the Flames, I would say. But at the same time, you have to really make that equation in your head. If it's between 2-3 years or 6 years, if it's 2-3, I can see the case for it. 100%, I can totally understand why you would want to do it. 6 years, that's where I jump off the bandwagon. I'm not on that
at all. If you're signing somebody to longer than 3 years, you have to, in my philosophy, you have to sort of see them as part of your core. You have to be like, you know, hot damn, we're like, when you sign Mark Giordano, whatever, like when they, Mark Giordano, I think it was like 29 or 30 when they signed to his big deal, he was, you know, they signed him to a multi-year, multi-million dollar contract and went, basically said, this is the guy we're building our blue line around. And okay, yeah, that made sense. Based on where he was and what he'd done performance-wise, they said, this is our guy, and they built around him. And so the idea would be like, okay, everything else is going to orbit around this guy. If you're signing Andre Kuzmenko or anyone else to a multi-year deal like that, I think you need to justify it as, this is the guy we're building around. And, you know, if you're not signing for that long, the message is we don't think he's the guy. And, you know, there's plenty of very good hockey players who just aren't guys that teams want to build around. It's not that they're bad. It's just that you have to make your choices. If you look at the Flames, I mean, look at the blue line they have. They're going to build that. They've made the decision to build their blue line around Mackenzie Weaker. And right now, okay, yeah, that seems fine. I don't think they figured out their forward group yet, but, you know, no. They're working
the
on
other,
it.
The other thing that I just want to say is, you know, there's somebody saying if they trade Kuzmenko, they might never find another point per game player to replace him. My saying is he's not a point per game player. He's never been a point per game player. He's not currently a point per game player with the Flames, even though he's currently shooting 23%. He is currently at his greatest output of the season. This is a guy who was a healthy scratch in Vancouver 2 months ago. And quite frankly, if the Flames are unable to draft a point per game player in this current retool, they have failed. That's not going to be changed by trading or keeping Kuzmenko. It's non-negotiable. You have to find those top players at the top end of the draft. And if you don't, then you got to restart anyway. So I think, personally, what I would do, I would look at it as if it's a short term, I keep it. If not, I trade them for whatever I can get. If at this rate, you know, maybe you can get a second round pick and they could use more of those. Then I just try and build through the draft. I try and get those point per game players, because with the way that scoring is going up in the league right now, 150 points is the new 120. 100 assists is the new 70. 82 points is the new 60. So it's not really the same economy anymore. A player like Kuzmenko, who scores a lot, you really have to examine what else he provides. And with the way that things are going, it's just tough.
Inflation's hitting everyone in different ways.
Sure is. It totally is, including the length of this episode. So with that, I think we're going to take the easy way out. I think that's our last viewer question. And I just want to thank everybody on the comment line for being so engaged and having a lot of fun just with us this evening. I think this has been a really fun show. And before we head off, Pike, just your last thoughts. I know it's getting pretty late, but anything you want to plug, you can tell the good people about your book again. Why not?
On the clock, behind the scenes with the Calgary Flames, the NHL draft, available everywhere you get books. So far, so good. People seem to like it. No one's come and thrown the book at me in the stands and said, this book is terrible. And I hope you wouldn't do that to me in person. Just do it on Twitter like everybody else does.
Yeah. On the clock, behind the scenes with the Calgary Flames at the NHL draft by Ryan Pike. That's it, right?
Yeah.
Yes, nailed it. Okay, that's Ryan Pike's book. You can buy it off Amazon. You can buy it off of, if you want to get it on your Kobo, go to Indigo's website. You can put it there. I know that because I did that with my Kobo. It's a good book. You should go get it. That's Ryan Pike's book, On the Clock. For Ryan Pike, my name is Mike Gould, saying thank you so much for tuning into this edition of Afterburner for this now Saturday morning. It was Friday evening. The boys will be back on Sunday to take on the Arizona Coyotes, and we'll have another episode for you then. Until then, this has been Mike and Pike on Afterburner.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.